Welcome to the Gilbo Girls Show, where you will have the opportunity to hear from mothers, fathers, siblings, and individuals themselves about their journey of living with a disability. I know, it's called Gilbo Girls, but we have a bonus for you as we get the Gilbo Boys to interview some of the dads and siblings to get their perspectives too. We'll also have special guests from time to time to share the many resources that are available to those living with a disability and their families. So get ready to laugh, smile, cry, maybe even get a little angry when you hear some of those stories of their day-to-day struggles. But let's not forget their many triumphs. As they say, it takes a village, and if it weren't for our village, we wouldn't be where we are today. So join us. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Gilbo Girls Show. I'm your host, Karen Gilbo, and today's guest is Brilliant Semenova, aka Brilly. Since 2004, Brilly has been a fierce advocate for individuals with disabilities, drawing from her own experiences as someone with cerebral palsy. With a master's degree in organizational leadership development and nonprofit management, Brilly strives to raise awareness about the essential services available to those in need. As a disability self-advocate, special education consultant, and public speaker on disability services, she is on a mission to empower struggling families and help individuals achieve their goals and advocate for themselves. So thank you so much, Brilly, for being on the show today. I appreciate it, and welcome. So let's start with your childhood. Can you share with us what it was like growing up? What were some of the challenges that you faced, and how did you overcome some of them? And that's on all aspects, physically, mentally, and emotionally, including the any accessibility challenges that you have faced.
Yeah, sure. I would love to elaborate. Thank you for introducing me. Yeah, as growing up as an individual with disability, I have noticed several different challenges. Mainly accessing services, hearing the word no as a common thing. Like anytime you go to look at resources, services and stuff, and you have to, even today you have to wait, you have to see the eligibility requirements and stuff, everything. But when I was growing up, services were extremely limited and you just don't know where to turn, who to ask. If you don't know, you don't know. It's a maze. It's like a networking. It's like puzzling. Like you don't know who to contact, who to go to when you're trying to do the various types of services, even though you may be talking about individuals with disabilities, but disability is so unique that it's not one size fit all. So for me, it was like, you constantly have to advocate and have to stay on top of everybody to ensure that you get the right services that you're entitled to. I would say that it was quite a challenge between education, K through 12, through, transitioning to adult services, because it's like you have 1 hour of IEP meetings, but that 1 hour isn't enough, to at least address, like, what do we do next? Who do we contact, whether it's OT, PT, or, which services, because you have to plan and you have to wait and you have to get everybody's approval. To me, it was the difficult challenges were like the waiting game, like constantly waiting to get the services that the individual is entitled to. From that perspective, it's like ongoing paperwork. And as someone who, is outgoing and positive, I didn't let it stop me, even though the school was supposed to be doing things and I did my own research, because I know if I sat there and waited, we would not get to where we needed to be.
Absolutely.
If that answers your question.
Yeah, absolutely. And how involved were your parents with the school? Did they have to do a lot of fighting to get what you needed? Or?
So basically, in terms of my parents, to them, it's like a second language. My mom comes from a medical background. She knew from a medical standpoint, yes, I need this, I need that. But when it came to the educational point, it's like a second language. So it's like constant battles, constant follow-ups. And it was an ongoing thing. It's like you're telling one person and you're telling, and nobody, there was no happy medium. Like nobody's following up with each other. So a lot of things have changed for me when I started sitting in the IEP meetings, because I was like, okay, you're telling me this and this, but mom doesn't go to school to me. So she doesn't know what happens on a day-to-day basis and what are some of the things that I would need to be successful in the academic environment. And, you know, from the teacher's perspective, from the administration perspective,
mm-hmm.
I found it in a way that they were not happy when I started sitting in the IEP meetings.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that had to be hard. And I know this, you know, wasn't one of the questions, but can you elaborate too? Like, what does it feel like, or what was your first experience from the first time you sat in? Because I know it's got to be hard, because a lot of times I feel like IEPs, let's face it, they sit there and they talk about your weaknesses more than they talk about your strengths. So that's kind of got to be hard on someone's, you know, self-esteem as well. And what would you say to someone out there who's going, you know, getting ready to sit in on their IEPs?
Well, one thing that for me, because I'm so outgoing and positive, the feedback, fortunately, all of the feedback, when they were communicating with the family, you know, they potentially started with the positive.
Right.
But one of the things that I had to remind the team and the administration and whoever else, even if they're bringing a new person to the team to evaluate whether it's a transition facilitator, I know for me, because I'm so outspoken, I remember at one point I told the transition facilitator, I may have a physical limitation, but it doesn't stop me from achieving and meeting my expectation and my desire to do what I want to do versus what the school wants to provide me.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's working with in an office facility or working somewhere else doing receptionist, I want to work with kids. I want to be around people. So what you're offering me is not a solution. And I literally told at one point to the transition facilitators, I said, you're here to help me, not to give me alternative options that does not fit my expectations as an individual with a disability.
Yeah, absolutely. So how old were you when you sat in on your first IEP?
14 years old.
14. Well, so to sit there and say all that, you definitely are very mature at 14, and definitely outspoken, which kudos to you, because that's awesome. That is awesome. Yeah.
I mean, to them, it was a take back because they were not expecting it. I said, yes, my mom helps me, but at the end of the day, it's not my mom's decision what I want to do in the future, what I want to go to post-secondary education, what I want to go to trade school, what I want to go to employment. I think the factor that we need to factor is what are some of my interests, and then take approach from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about
and
siblings?
I think it was a wake-up call. It was a wake-up call for the IEP meeting.
Yeah. I know when every time we went in, when we used to do the advocacy classes, we always, you know, centered had a picture of our child and pretty much like a short bio. And when our child wasn't in there, we would go ahead and that's how we would start it. And we put it right in the middle of the table. And, you know, so we knew we were talking about her. This was the child at the forefront. But even going into a lot of the IEPs, you know, we started off with the positives, but then again, they always talked about, you know, the weaknesses and they tried to, you know, do it in a pleasant way, but still the person sitting on the other end, if they know they're struggling, it's really hard to have to hear all of those. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, my way to express it to them was like, if I didn't struggle, I wouldn't have an IEP in the first place.
Yep.
And this is the purpose of having that IEP in place, to ensure that I can get the necessary support to thrive academically. Unfortunately, is that it had to do with my physical aspect, whether it's technology, whether it's whatever the case may be. And I had to remind them sometimes, fortunately, not all the time, but sometimes, is that we all go through struggles some way or another. We all unique in our own ways. We all have weaknesses. And unfortunately, my weakness is the physical aspect. And at times I would say, like, spend 5 minutes in my shoes before you start to say something.
Yeah.
Just seeing this from a different angle may not be the same as trying and putting yourself in someone else's shoes.
Absolutely. I love that. Okay, let's switch gears. Do you have any siblings? And if so, what was your relationship growing up with them? And are you still close with them now?
Yes, I have two siblings. I'm the middle child. I'm the only girl. I was close with my younger sibling when I was growing up, because he was more around. We all did our own things, but because of my own outgoing in the community and everything, I was always in the walls doing things. And I saw siblings, but it wasn't something that I would sit down and spend time in things. I was always running around doing after school activities or volunteering, having myself engaged in various things. Mm-hmm. So in terms of my relationship, I would say that my relationship was pretty decent. They were definitely there if I needed support, but because I'm so outgoing and wanting to do things independently, because if I'm out in the community and there's nobody around, I need to know how to help myself to be able to achieve that goal. So even if they were around, I would avoid asking for help unless it's something urgently needed. Like, mm-hmm. I believe that I can accomplish anything if I put my mind to it.
Absolutely, absolutely. How about making friends in and out of school? Did you find it difficult?
No. Thankfully, I did not encounter that during my K through 12 years, and even in my post-secondary. In fact, one of the things that the academics, the administrations at school said is that, you know, that I was always friendly, that I always had people surrounding me, people always wanted to be friends with me and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it was just like a way, you know, for me, that was not an issue.
Good. Even did you have any like accessibility challenges going to friends' houses and stuff?
Oh, yeah. The accessibilities were always there and they're still there today. Mm-hmm. But I didn't let it bother me, because I told my friends, if you want to be around me, if you want to be surrounded by me, whether you're just, you know, whether you have challenges or not, you're going to have to accept me the way it is. So we're going to have to figure out together how we're going to be going through.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we're all part of this together. By my personal, my perseverance and positive attitude, these friends, you know, it was an eye-opener to them what it's like to accommodate and assist someone with a disability. And part of one of them, actually, by being with me, it gave her a path to choose her career as an educator.
Oh, wow. Love that. Love that. Did you experience any type of bullying growing up?
No.
Good.
No, this was like, this is something that typically parents think of and know that it's going to come down because of a disability. But for me, it was quite the opposite. Because maybe it's because I'm outspoken. Maybe mm-hmm. because I look at things on a positive side. Maybe I know how to stand up for myself and advocate. That's maybe why I didn't experience this, where the most individuals do. But for me, it was just like not even a conversation to even have it.
Yeah. And did you ever feel left out at all?
No. If anything, I felt like there's not enough time in the day to attend all these events and programs and these friends. And like every weekend, I had something planned that was going out, meeting new people, going out with friends, going bowling or elsewhere. It was just not enough time.
That's awesome. That is so awesome. So what was your experience like in college? Did you stay in the dorm? Or was it?
No, I did not stay in the dorm. I went to a community college for a couple, couple years to get my associate's degree in elementary education, because my original path was teaching. But then as more and more I got into it, I realized the challenges individuals were facing and their families. I figured when I was in school, it was challenging, but the more and more I got into it, the challenges really are happening now. There's no clear roadmap for individuals and their families that they can contact an individual or a professional. Yes, there's a lot of job coaches, there's a lot of advocates, but there's no really advocates that can sit down with families and provide them a clear roadmap to what services they're entitled to based on their interests, based on their disability, based on their situation. And I was like, you know what? Teaching is really not my roadmap then, because if I can't provide the services to these families, then no one will.
Mm-hmm.
So I changed my path and got a degree in, I have my bachelor's in psychology. I have my bachelor's in health and human services and family studies. I have a minor in disability studies because I figured if I would be stuck to a classroom, I would not be able to do the advocacy I'm doing today.
Yeah.
I would be restricted as a school personnel. But this way, I can go in and still advocate for those families and individuals.
That's awesome. Did you, as far as college too, what type of supports did you need during college? Do you need any type of like speech to text or scribing, or is there anything like extra that you would need?
Yes. So I would, as I'm sure you're aware, as an individual with CP, you know, the weather definitely has a huge impact. So, you know, if it's rainy or snowy, my muscles tend to get tighter and stiffer, where I'm not as able to do things during those inclement weather, in fact, that I'm able to do during the warm weather. So when that time came, I was more relying from the physical standpoint on other people to assist me, whether it's scribing, whether it's dictation, whether it's carrying books, whatever the case may be, although I tried to be as independent as possible, but I knew that I had to tell myself, in order for me to achieve what I needed to achieve, I had to be open to accept the help that I needed. So that meant talking to my, you know, DSS counselors, talking to my instructors, talking to the group members if I was working on a group project, not to disclose my condition, but to inform them in advance, hey, I have physical limitations and I like to plan things ahead of time because I can't predict what the future is going to hold. You know, I depend on technology, and if the technology crashes, it's not like I can go to a different lab or a different computer to do my work. So it was definitely a lot of planning, like needing things to access things a week or two earlier than my typical peers. Definitely required to speak to the instructors. Maybe, let's say the semester started in August, I would start planning in June, if not May, to get them a better understanding. Here are my needs. Here's what I need for you to be proactive. Although for a lot of DSS counselors, it was just an eye opener. They're like, this is our job to do. I'm like, I understand this is your job to do, but it's no point for me to come to you to be the third party to tell them and then for me to rely on you because you're not the one sitting in the classroom. At the end of the day, it's up to the professor and the student how they want to approach it because they're the ones teaching the course. You know, just because I have an accommodation, the professor may not feel comfortable to accommodate because he or she may not be equipped to do physical disabilities. I also wanted to give the opportunities to my instructors. What's the easiest way for them to accommodate me? Because I'm not the only one that they're teaching. There could be multiple other students with various disabilities. It could be an invisible disability. So I wanted to be obviously on their radar, but at the same time, I wanted to set up a collaboration between myself and the instructors and really get to the habit of, yes, I know that DSS is there, but God forbid, if DSS, you know, if something happens and it's after hours and DSS is not there, I need to be able to advocate. So I always told the DSS counselors, I appreciate your help, but part of being, you know, part of going to post-secondary education is that students need to learn how to do self-advocacy. And this is the best time to do it. I think it was not something that DSS counselors were willing to listen. I was basically taking the ownership on myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which was very a struggle. It was very a struggle because, that didn't fall in their parameters. And I had to set back sometimes. And I'm like, I can't do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I often wondered how it was different and what the struggles were going to college, because I know obviously college, and like with my daughter, for instance, she has a one-on-one para. But if she goes to community college, they don't offer paras for those things, but she can
No, they don't. You can bring your own.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that the professor will allow that para to be in there for confidentiality purposes and HIPAA. It's a lot more planning involved than people actually think about. And even though you have the accommodation for one class, the same accommodations that you need for another, at the end of the day, it all comes down to the professors. Yes, they need to, they need to follow ADA guidelines. But if our professors do not have the skills or knowledge, not because they don't want to, but because they don't have the proper training, we can't hold them accountable for something that's not been offered to them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
Like, I can't say every professor is perfect. Yeah, there are some professors that are just being resistant up front, but at least from a student's perspective, it was definitely a challenge because, sometimes I had to plan early, arrive 2 hours earlier than expected to come to places, because I never know what the day is going to bring, and make sure that, the wheelchair is somewhere that I can easily access it when I'm going long distances. So it's definitely been a lot of planning, and I'm glad that I took the initiative early on versus waiting on the DSS counselors, because I would not have been able to accomplish the things that I accomplished in a short period of time. And the thing with the universities, they don't like to tell the students. They don't like to tell, the students that you can do a fast track versus a slow path. And I did not agree with the slow path, because the longer you stay in there, the more money is going to go, come, and you're going to run out of financial aid. So I knew that I had to go through two different battles, the physical and the financial battle.
Yeah.
And we as students are not off. There's no financial literacy that is being offered at a high school level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Going to college is like you're paying a second mortgage.
Yep.
So for me, it was a constant, in a positive way, but it was a constant battle to be among the DSS counselors and the professors, and because they're being told one thing, and then I'm telling the whole opposite. I had to come to the point where I had to say, in order for me to be proactive, I need to have things in advance.
Yeah.
I need to have things in advance. I basically, in a way, kind of developed my own accommodation letter, because no money knows me as best as I do.
Yep. Amen. Yeah, absolutely. Now, what about living wise? Do you live on your own now? And do you have drop-in supports at all? And if so, how has your experience been when it comes to hiring and keeping staff?
So I live with my mom. Because I'm so out in the community, I figure that it's no point of me going elsewhere, because I'm, the morning and basically come in the evenings. It's no point of me getting an apartment at this time to pay extra rent and stuff when I could just live with my mom, and my mom has been my support all this long.
Mm-hmm. Now,
so
she's
helping me in the mornings, and like if it's somewhere local, she'll drive me. But if I have to go somewhere, it's either friends, family, or I rely on, if people want me to come advocate, I tell them, because I don't drive, they would have to at least do transportation arrangements.
Right. Okay. So you don't have anybody, you don't have, you're not on the self-direct waiver or anything like
no.
that? Okay. Right.
No. No, I am definitely, that was the school up through the high school, which happens often. A lot of times the high school transition facilitators do not let families know to register for the waivers when individuals are in high school.
Yeah, but you can still to this day apply for a waiver.
Yes, but if you don't apply when you're in high school, the waiting list is 15 years. So I've been going through rope maps explaining the situation. I knew that I needed to apply, but the transition facilitator screwed up.
Interesting. Okay. Because I knew that because my daughter's been on the waiting list for the waiver. But from when, if she didn't get it, then when she turned 21, then she would have been able to.
The waiting list. So if you didn't get it when you're in high school, the waiting list for services could be 10 to 15 years.
Wow. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Let's switch gears to when did you launch your disability advocacy and consulting business, and what inspired you to do so?
This really started when I was in high school. I was basically a freshman in high school because I was very involved in after school programs. I noticed that, you know, as I was finishing the activities that I was helping with volunteering, I noticed that there was a student sitting. And because I'm so nurturing, like wanting to serve and help anybody that I come in contact, I figured that I would walk over to the student to check to see if everything was okay. Because, you know, it's after hours, no students, no nothing. So, because, you know, I thought of myself immediately, what if I was in that student's position? And I'm trying to see things. So as I was talking to the student, it revealed that she was having difficulties. Then her parent came along and explained the situation. So I gave them some resources, what they could do to ensure that she had the services that she needed while she was in high school. And from that point on, the families, you know, started talking about my services. And really, you know, it was all word of mouth. I believe in serving and helping to the best of my abilities. It's not all about money. It's giving back to our community.
Yeah. Can you share some of the things that you support families with when it comes to primary and secondary education?
Sure. So it could be helping for post-secondary. It could be helping them understand the path of accommodations if they want to continue education courses, degree track, getting them the understanding what services are out there, like financial aid, scholarships, grants, how to develop an accommodation letter, what to ask for, what's reasonable accommodation, what modifications. That's one of the things from the academic standpoint. From the employment standpoint, I can help families get volunteer opportunities, talk to the coordinators or job interviewers to let them know that, hey, there's a student coming in who needs to do an internship or wants to get some experience, community service hours, and here's what they need. So I can help students get interview questions, prepare for their interview, also play the role of a job coach, where I not only help the individual get a volunteer position, but then transition to paid employment, and also and to ensure that the employer can accommodate the individual's needs.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's awesome. That's awesome. What about independent living? I know this is a tough one for everyone, I think. So how do you support families in that area?
So I start early on. I start to tell families that transition really starts from elementary school to middle school, from middle school to high school, from high school to adult services. It doesn't just start in high school and middle school. So I start to have these conversations with families early on. I try to tell families that maybe they should do like a weekend retreat or overnight summer camp program to really see what their child is capable of doing early on. To get an experience, to be exposed, what it's like to be away from mom and dad and from home. And because then the student is going to be much more motivated to be as independent as possible.
Yeah.
So I start having conversation. I start giving the families these options because they need to start early on to determine, is my child going to be able to live on their own, or do they need some sort of support, like community first choice? Do they need help? Someone to come out and be with them at night or in the morning, or do they need to go to a group home or assisted living and things like that? You know, I give families the options of what's available so they could start exploring things. So it's not a wake-up call when my child hits 21 or 22 and they have to graduate and we have no services in place.
Yeah, Yeah. Can you share a success story with us?
Sure. When the pandemic hit in December, obviously when things were shutting down, I actually helped start a nonprofit organization called Helpedia, where no help gets unheard, because I get, in a way, it's only one of me and thousands of other people, and I can only serve so much. So I connected to, you know, people reached out to me. I explained to them, this is what needs to happen. We start, you know, the nonprofit started. And it's really like, if you need a financial planner, the financial planner is there. If you need a college consulting, the college consulting is there. If you need a mental health professional, the mental health professional. It's a one-stop shop, and it's all virtual that families can access regardless of where they're located, in-state or out-of-state or internationally.
That's awesome. And what is the name of it again?
Helpedia, like Wikipedia, but
Helpedia.
Oh,
that's awesome. That is awesome. I love that. I love that.
Yes.
So you mentioned in your bio that you're also a public speaker as well. What topics do you cover, and where are some of the places that you've spoken at?
I have assisted individuals in the education area, where I speak to our future educators what it's like to accommodate students in their classroom that don't even have a 504 or an IEP, but the teachers are noticing that they need some challenges. So I did assistant technology discussions. I did special education discussions. I spoke to, you know, post-secondary and teachers that are switching their careers. So I spoke to Towson University multiple times. I also did presentations on workforce technology. Last year, I did a presentation on employment for HR managers, how to accommodate students with disabilities and what to look for when it comes to accommodations. I also did transition speaking to help families understand the transition process at various fairs.
That's awesome. What's the most rewarding aspect of your job?
The fact that I can help, even if it's one person or two people, the fact that I can make a difference in their lives, especially after they've been turned away and that feeling defeated, that there's no hope, to bring a light to their life and really have them to be encouraged that at the end of the tunnel, there's still some hope there.
Yeah, and you're a big part of them helping them, you know, succeed and moving forward. That's awesome.
Yes.
If someone wanted to work with you or have you come speak, how can they contact you?
My contact information is on my flyer. I'm also on LinkedIn, and I'm also on Facebook Special Needs Groups.
Okay, awesome. And I am going to go ahead and make sure I have all of those links. And then that way I can put them in the show notes as well. So before we wrap up, is there anything else that you would like to share or any advice that you would like to give?
Part of the advice would be, and maybe sharing this, is that individuals should always follow their dreams regardless of their circumstances. And families should always be their child's best advocate, because at the end of the day, as a parent, you know your child's best, regardless how difficult it is.
Yeah. And,
you know, never take no for an answer. Even if it's 30 no's, you get one yes after 30 no's. Keep going that path. At the end of the day, you'll reach somebody that wants to make a difference.
Yes, 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 yes. Awesome. So as a token of appreciation for being a guest on our show, I gift all of my guests with a My Intent token, where I hand stamp one letter at a time with a hammer what their meaningful words are. So with that being said, do you mind sharing what word you chose and why?
I chose to be positive, determined, and achievement. Because if you're not positive, it's going to be hard for you to achieve any types of goals or aspirations that you have in your life, especially these days when our economy, when our services are limited. You have to always see the bright side.
Yeah. Amen. Absolutely. Well, I wanted to thank you for taking the time out of your day to hop on this call with me and do this awesome interview. I'm definitely going to have all of your information in the show notes, so that way if people want to reach out for help and or to have you come be a guest speaker, they will be able to do so. And I will talk to you soon, and I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Karen. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Thank you for joining us as we spread awareness through our personal stories and the many resources shared. You can help us by joining our village simply by sharing our show with the masses. You can also become a supporter of the show by clicking on the link in the show notes. Your funds will allow us to keep sharing these valuable, heartfelt stories and resources. Be sure to subscribe to our Gilbo Girls podcast and YouTube show, and don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Gilbo Girls.